to be sure they expected to be rewarded, to take ports, to secure areas, to make sure that some kind of credible kingdom could be set up. And Baldwin really gets the credit for doing this. He also gets the credit, as we shall see, in winning over his vassals. He ruled. He was not a popular man in many ways. He ruled rather harshly. He was a rather cold fish compared to his brother Godfrey in his personality. But he did know how to rule by counsel, that is, in consent with his vassals. He, after all, had been a younger son himself. He understood feudal customs and methods of discussion, and that went a far way in securing the support of his various vassals in Jerusalem. So when Baldwin died in 1118, he had been married three times. He had one child by the first marriage that had died as an infant. He had no heirs. And so the nobility of Jerusalem turned to Baldwin's cousin, who was then Count of Edessa, Baldwin II. And Baldwin II came in and took over as the second king of Jerusalem. And in turn, a fellow named Jocelyn took over, Jocelyn of Courtney, as a Count of Edessa. If Baldwin I deserves a great deal of credit for the extension of the boundaries of Jerusalem, Baldwin II really should get more for the institutional development of the kingdom, and I'll be discussing a number of these developments in other lectures. But for our purposes, Baldwin II achieved several important breakthroughs. One was the capture of Tyre, which took place in 1124. This is the one leading port still outside of Crusader hands, and what was remarkable, it was captured at a time when he actually was in the hands of some Turkoman captors and was being ransomed. That is, he could inspire his nobles and the Patriarch of Jerusalem to continue to run the kingdom even while he was in captivity. And that essentially rounded out the kingdom's frontier. Osculum was still in the hands of the Fatimids in Egypt, but that could be tolerated. In addition, Baldwin twice intervened decisively in succession problems in Antioch and made sure that the northern states were secured against Turkish threats. He imposed his suzerainty over them. The homage from Jerusalem meant something. He was active in resettling Christians in the city of Jerusalem, in promoting caravan routes, especially among the Bedouin tribes, whether they be Muslim or Christian, to continue their movements across the political frontiers and so secure the frontiers, the prosperity of the kingdom. And above all, he secured for the kingdom a stable succession. He only had four daughters. Melzende, the oldest, was married off to Fulk of Anjou, one of the leading nobles of France. And Fulk came to rule as king when Baldwin died. And Fulk turned out to be actually a brilliant choice as well. But above all, that marriage alliance connected Jerusalem with the kings of France and England. And ever after, with Baldwin II, there was this tie to the courts at Paris as well as the courts in England. And by the death of Fulk, who was the third of the kings of Jerusalem, the kingdom of Jerusalem had achieved a stability in its institutions. It had achieved defensible frontiers. It was now, without question, the overlord of all of the Crusader states. It had powerful connections with Western Europe. If there were ever to be a dispute over succession within the kingdom of Jerusalem, it could be settled according to European customs and with appeals to the King of France. There was always this notion that somehow the King of France had some responsibility for these former vassals that were now living in Outremer. This was an extraordinary achievement. This was an achievement really on par with the expedition of the First Crusade itself, because the first generation of those crusaders who went out there and achieved those victories proved what was perhaps one of the most difficult aspects of war, which was once expressed by Livy, the Roman historian of Hannibal, that you may know how to win victory, but the real key is how to use it.